Well, hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. Hope everybody's having a wonderful Wednesday. Staying very busy over here in sunny Florida. Lots of orders we're shipping out to our awesome customers. And, having a great time as always. First thing I wanted to address is make sure we're praying right now as hard as we can for everybody in Puerto Rico. They are getting hit significantly hard with this hurricane. It looks like it pretty much the hurricane four, category four, went over them directly. I mean, completely hit them. And now I just saw reports. They said the entire power system is out in Puerto Rico, meaning nobody has power. The entire power grid is down, meaning it's going to be a significant amount of time before they can get that up and running if they've had extensive damage. So it made landfall with 155 mile an hour winds. This is the biggest hurricane to ever hit the island since 1932. This is pretty rough, Dad, but definitely we need to be praying for them right now.
You have to ask yourself a question. They controlled these storms. They ran it right on top. I mean, the eye went right over the middle of Puerto Rico. Maybe it's because Puerto Rico defaulted. Puerto Rico doesn't want to pay their bills. Maybe this is how they treat people. Remember, these guys, if you don't pay their bills, you don't do what you're supposed to do with your automobile, they seize your automobile. They do everything they want to do to you now. And they may be just deciding just to seize the island and putting it into a massive state of receivership. I mean, this is going to take billions and billions and billions and tens of billions of dollars just to restore the infrastructure on that island. And maybe they've decided that since those people don't want to pay the bills, they're going to let that happen to them and they're not going to try to help them get back. But this is what happened to us with Hurricane Donna. It had these really, really high winds back in 1960 when I was 5 years old here in Florida. And I remember waking up the next morning, it dumped 30 inches of rain. And I'll never forget, Austin, you know, my mom had that fish camp with those cottages down by the lake, and that one cottage that was right on the water down there, the water literally came up past the cottage, and just to get in the cottage, you had to walk through the water. It was like 18 inches deep. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen, and trees down everywhere. So when you get those 120, 130, 140, 150 mile an hour storms, it'll tear up a lot of stuff really, really fast, especially these Category 4s like this. So, again, let's pray for them. Father, right now, in the name of Jesus, Lord, I pray for these people in Puerto Rico. Father, I pray that you find them shelter, that you find them water, that you find them food, that they get the infrastructure back up. I pray for protection for these people down there, Lord. And I just ask you to have mercy on them, Lord, because this is something that I know you didn't do. But, Lord, just have mercy on these people and help them the best you can, Lord. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. So it's going to be interesting, bud.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it's pretty wild now when you start looking at this over and over and over again. We just had Harvey just trash South Texas. Then we had a huge one come through Florida there's still people out in Polk City that are 30 minutes down the road from me that still don't have power, friends that I have. A buddy of mine on Lake Hollingsworth, which is a very high-end housing area, he just got power back yesterday. And, I mean, then we had that massive earthquake in Mexico. It was 8.1. Then we just had this thing absolutely crush Puerto Rico today. Then Mexico again got hit with another earthquake last night. There's some really, really, really significant things that are going on in this region right now. And in my opinion, they are not coincidence at all. These are way too aggressive of incidences to be happening back to back to back like this in the exact same region. I mean, if we had a hurricane hit Texas and then a storm happen up in, you know, England or something like that, okay, whatever. But it's all consolidated in this one region of the entire globe. So it seems to me there's a lot of serious activity going on right now.
Well, they're making their point. You know, it's the same thing that I talked about, you know, last year when Donald Trump, you know, became president back in November and he was going to take office in January. And I said, we'll see who runs the planet. We'll see if the chemtrails keep going. And they haven't stopped anything. Yeah. So we know that deep state runs the planet. They've been doing so since they didn't do it initially in 47. Eisenhower actually nailed them pretty hard as far as finding out what was going on out there with Roswell and Area 51. And so it's interesting to me, Austin, and now here we are 9 months into the administration, and we're starting to realize that Trump basically had a military junta, we talked about that yesterday, take over the White House. He's being very, very secluded and only given information that they want him to have. Very, very isolated. His top bodyguard of 20 years was forced to retire. So it's interesting to me now that Trump's actually slurring his words when he speaks. They're talking about that the other day on one of the other shows, that this is something that he's got himself into right now. So hopefully he's not being poisoned or being given drugs in his food or whatever, like they did with Reagan. Because remember, they already did this with Ronald Reagan. They kept Reagan doped up for 8 years. He slept all the time. And George Bush from the CIA ran the White House. And then George Bush had 4 more years running the White House and didn't want to do it again. By the way, the retail apocalypse is continuing in the United States. 20 more big retailers are closing stores in 2017 to Toys R Us. They're basically in the middle of bankruptcy right now. Abercrombie and Fitch, they're closing stores. Aerosols, American Apparel, Bebe, The Children's Place, CVS, Guess, Gymboree, H.G. Craig is going to close all of its stores, all 220 stores. They lay off thousands and thousands of employees. JCPenney's continuing to close stores. The Limited, Macy's, Payless, Radio Shack, Sears, Kmart, Wet Seal. This whole thing happening with what's happening with Obamacare and these massive deductibles, Austin, with these people with their health care costs has massively affected, and we did a story on this about 2 months ago, incredibly affected the amount of money that people have as far as discretionary income to continue to buy things they don't need or even to buy staples in some cases. So a lot of these stores with these special brands are just shutting down and shutting their doors because people are finally saying, you know, I don't need another car. I don't need to buy anything else. I can't make these insane payments on the medical insurance. And on top of that, I can't make the payments, you know, on anything else that I buy because I'm upside down. Ford is now suspending production at 5 North American plants, Austin, because Ford Motor Company said Tuesday it plans to idle 5 North American vehicle assembly plants for a total of 2.5 months. To reduce the inventories of slow-selling models. All these models are stuck at the factories, they're stuck at the ports, they're stuck in the distribution centers, they're stuck on the dealers' lots, and nobody's buying the cars because of the massive upside-down equity that everybody has in their vehicles. Let me cover that with you again. If you buy a car and you finance it for $50,000, and after 1 year it's worth $25,000, and you still owe $50,000 on it, and you try to trade out of it, they may allow you more money on your car because they raise the price of the other car and give you no discounts, but then you have negative equity in that second loan. You do that 2 or 3 times, and now all of a sudden you're like $20,000 upside down in a car that you own, and you can't get out of it again. They simply can't trade you out of the vehicle again. And that's what's happened now. That's why all of these vehicles are sitting on the lots. That's why pickup trucks that are selling for $60,000 and $70,000 and $80,000 it's nonsense. You can't use that as a work truck. You can't use that to continue your day-to-day activities if you're a small business. It's simply not. It doesn't pay for itself. It's too expensive. And this is what these guys are running into. Ford's run into it, and I'm sure General Motors is doing the same thing. I guess they're waiting, Austin, for the pipeline to open up for all the vehicles that are going to have to be replaced in Florida and in Houston to clear this inventory off the books. But I want to cover this because we had talked about this last week about the million or so cars that have been damaged or flooded that now need to be replaced. So it's going to be a crazy year, guys. And remember, the stock market is running on a bubble that's about to pop. And as far as I'm concerned, they're going to use Trump as a scapegoat. And right before the midterms, I mentioned this yesterday, I believe they're going to collapse the market at the end of the year just to see what they can do up to that point and blame everything on the Donald. What do you think, Austin?
Yeah, there's definitely some strange stuff. And, I mean, that's what they even said in that article that you were just reading, that there's almost 20,000 people that are employed in those factories. And so Ford so far has not said what they're going to do with those workers or with layoffs. They said as of the beginning of this month, Ford has over 111 days worth of unsold Mustangs, over 103 days supply of transit vans, and 162 days worth of Lincoln Continentals. That is, you're literally talking almost half the year they are backed up with Lincoln Continentals as far as what they're selling. And that's what Dad just said. A lot of people are switching over to SUVs and pickup trucks now. And that's why, if you notice, if you go to a lot of the dealerships, the inventory on the SUVs and the pickup trucks, a lot of times there's still quite a few of them, but it's not even close to as many as it is of the passenger vans and a lot of these sedans that they have sitting there. There's literally tens, hundreds, thousands of them in some of these big dealerships just sitting there, and they can't get rid of the inventory. I'm not sure exactly why Americans have transitioned so much over to SUVs and trucks as far as for a lot of people. I know me personally, I love pickup trucks because of the functionality of them, being able to throw stuff in the bed, throw the dogs in the bed, throw tools in the bed, not worry about scratching stuff in the bed. And the SUVs are great. I mean, I have an SUV for Landon, and I have a pickup truck. That's all we drive. SUVs are great for kids. You can throw them in there. You can throw stuff in the back. You keep it locked up. And I think a lot of people are just starting to kind of steer away from these really, really small cars, as there's nothing wrong with them. But a lot of times, if you have a lot of people in your family like we do, or you're doing a lot of outdoor activities and you need something that's four-wheel drive with high ground clearance and functional for everyday usage, the really, really small compact cars just aren't that functional in those areas. So maybe that's it, Dad, but there's definitely a huge market that's switched over to these SUVs and trucks, and there's still, the problem is, as you just said, the prices on this stuff are getting astronomical too, though, with a lot of these trucks now. That's why you see them putting these huge rebates on these trucks, trying to get the price down to be more affordable for a lot of people now.
That's exactly right. And the thing is, what's interesting about this, Austin, is that when the fuel prices go up, the truck sales and the SUV sales go down.
Yep.
Because if you're getting 20 miles per gallon versus getting 40 miles per gallon, that's a big difference if the gas is costing you $2 a gallon versus $6 a gallon.
Yeah.
And so that's what's happened. In fact, I know I had a diesel SUV for a long time, and I finally asked the dealership what happened to the resale value on the diesel SUVs, and they said, well, diesel costs 20, 30, 40, 50 cents more per gallon, number one, and you may get better fuel mileage, but when you look at the cost of the diesel fuel versus the cost of regular gasoline, you're not saving any money. You're having to mess around with diesel, which is a real nasty fuel to pump because it gets on everything, and it's just a greasy mess. So people don't want to drive the diesels anymore. That's one of the reasons that Mercedes completely got rid of diesels in the United States, and also Volkswagen has gotten rid of diesels coming into the United States, and BMW has gotten rid of diesels because they were only like 1% of the market share for these cars or these SUVs. And since the fuel prices are now so low, the demand has gone down so low, they really can't sell them, and they don't have a really good resale value. So that's why that's the end of the SUV market with diesel engines. I really wish that Chevrolet would come out with their Silverado, not with their Silverado, with their Suburban, and put a diesel engine, like, because at one time you could order it, you know, I think it was a 7.3 diesel in those trucks, and they'd get 25, 30 miles per gallon and tow or pull anything. And I don't understand why they won't go ahead and put that Duramax engine in their SUVs, which would get a lot better fuel mileage. Well, I can't say that. If you leave all the pollution controls on the diesels now, they don't get any better fuel mileage. They're going to get around 17 or 18, and the truck itself with the gas engine will get 18 to 21. So it won't get any better fuel mileage. I take that back. But it'll get about the same. It'll pull more, but then you have the problems with the diesels overheating and running too hot, trying to meet emissions requirements. So it's interesting when you stop and look at it. By the way, in Mexico had another earthquake, hundreds dead this time. They're scrambling for survivors as the quake flattens Mexico City buildings. When the earthquake hit, it sent panicked people running into the street, but many weren't so lucky. The dust settled minutes later revealed a landscape of flattened buildings and rubble in the heart of Mexico City. So maybe Mexico City is not paying the bills either, Austin, and now they're going to have their little dealing with the hurricanes and also dealing with earthquakes. I mean, this is nuts. When you realize that our government has the ability to produce earthquakes, it's an earthquake weapons. The Soviets have them also. When you realize that we have the ability to steer hurricanes and produce earthquakes, it really makes you wonder every single time you see a natural disaster like an earthquake or a hurricane, if one of these Sabbatean Kabbalist guys or the military or one of these weirdos is not involved in doing this. Because always remember, Jack Parsons, who worked with NASA, with the rockets and the engines, etc., back in the 50s, was really good friends with L. Ron Hubbard, who had been really good friends with Crowley. And what's crazy about all of this stuff is that they were all Satanists, every one of them. The founder of Scientology was a Luciferian. I mean, he practiced Satanism. And that's the nuttiest thing about all of this stuff, is that when you start getting to the hierarchies, Austin, it always goes back to Satanism. Also, always goes back to these guys being Luciferians, and all of it always goes back to the sacrifices these guys do, the blood things they do, and all the sick stuff they're involved in. So this entire planet now is being run with these guys, and they're coming out more and more in the open. That's why Hillary was so open about her voodoo and the voodoo dolls and all the other things.
Yep.
Because now insiders are saying with her that she basically was not elected because she didn't come out and basically declare herself what she was, a Sabbatean witch. And they said if she had done that, that she feels as though now, had she told everybody the truth of what she was, that she would have beaten Donald Trump. Now, I certainly hope that's not true. I certainly hope that, you know, she wouldn't have beaten Donald Trump with this, that enough of the Christians would have gotten off their pews and done something other than sit around and, now I'm going to stop there. They would actually gone out and done something with their lives as far as bringing forward the gospel and bringing in trying their best to bring in the kingdom of God on this planet. If they do that, then she would never have gotten in. But guys, it's some weird stuff when they're talking like this and they're coming so open, especially like we talked about yesterday, Austin, with Hollywood and the day before, how overtly satanic the movies are and how creepy they've become from Hollywood. That disastrous movie that Tom Cruise came out with this year with the mummy and all that. So we're going to see what happens in the next 5 or 10 years. We're going to see just how bad this thing's going to get in the United States, and if this military junta that's now pretty much running the White House, including Donald Trump, actually decides to take more power, more authority. Because again, it's like I said, you guys, many times for the new listeners, here's how it works. We give the power to politicians. The politicians give the power to the military. The military gives it to the CIA and the special, you know, and basically these secret organizations. And then they give it to the 17 Kabbalists. And these guys are the ones, the wizards and the warlocks that seem to run the planet with their human sacrifice. That's how sick and twisted this whole system is. And Donald Trump has found himself right in the middle of this septic tank, so to speak. So hopefully they don't give him some kind of drugs, cause a stroke, cause dementia, or whatever, Austin, and they rule him unfit for the office, because they're doing something. Rodney Howard Brown broke that story about a month and a half ago that they're planning on taking him out, and I hope this is not the way they're going to do it. What do you think?
Yeah, me too. Definitely some weird stuff going on, especially, like we said yesterday, with how much power the military and the generals have been given now, and now the military-industrial complex is in full spool again, because now we're sending more stuff over to Afghanistan. We're talking about getting ready to start, you know, a war with Iran and with North Korea. A lot of really weird stuff with all that going on right now. So I really hope, yeah, you're right, he hasn't been compromised. I don't think he has, as far as in his own sense, but there's no telling, is what you just said. The problem is there's so many moving parts in the White House. There's so many people involved in everything, and if you get one person in there that can be bought, and they start adding something to the water, adding something to the food, just doing little stuff here and there that's going to slowly degrade his mental capacity, it's going to be much, much easier for them to get him to do stuff, because he's not going to have that ability to really stand firm in a lot of aspects of it. Also, too, I wanted to bring this up today. Even over in Europe now, scientists and physicians are absolutely appalled of the whole 5G network, and I mean, they're completely adamant as far as not having this stuff installed, yet they're trying to do it over in the European Union, just like they're doing it here, with absolutely no foresight, no research, and no approval at all. Just on September 13th this year, which was last week, more than 180 scientists and doctors sent in an 11-page appeal on the rollout of the 5G to the European Union. The reason for the appeal, they said, is the RF-EMF has been proven to be harmful for humans and the environment, and 5G has not been investigated fully for potential health hazards and environmental impact by independent scientists. Rather, industry scientists, who apparently would rubber stamp 5G similarly as the other generations of telecommunications updates have been. It says 5G, the issue with it is it's only effective over short distances and is transmitted poorly through solid materials. Because of this inefficiency in transmission, a tremendous amount of antennas and cell towers will need to be implemented for 5G service. With the ever more extensive use of wireless technologies, nobody can avoid being exposed to this stuff, because on top of the increased number of 5G transmitters, even with housing, shops, hospitals, according to the estimates, there's going to need to be 10 to 20 billion connections between refrigerators, washing machines, surveillance cameras, self-driving cars, buses, etc., will all be together in the part of the Internet of Things, they say. All these together will cause a substantial increase in the total long-term RF-EMF exposure to all EU citizens. And, I mean, that was just a partial of what they said there, and I think that's pretty good and to the point, but that's exactly what we've been talking about, is it's such short-lived as far as how far it has to go. It needs antennas everywhere, and this is the whole aspect of what they're wanting to do, because it's what they just said. All these smart TVs, all these smart dishwashers, all these smart refrigerators that I just talked about the other day, all this stuff is going to pick up on the 5G, so you're literally going to be bathing in this 5G network everywhere you go. You're not going to be able to get away with it unless you go like out in the middle of the country somewhere where nobody lives. That's an issue because it's going to be constant exposure to this frequency all the time, Dad, and nobody's wanting to address this. I'm glad these 180 scientists are bringing it up in the EU, but even the United States, this stuff is slowly getting pushed, and a lot of states are already starting to approve it, yet nobody's even beginning in a vote. Nobody's being asked in these local areas if they're okay with this going on, man.
They're doing it here too, Austin, with Verizon. They're bringing it, rolling it out because they want to continue to build their slave state. By the way, Trump's speech to the UN yesterday, if you listen to it, it's a pretty good speech. I didn't catch him slurring his words on that, but one thing I want to share, I'll talk about the speech, but I'm talking about the slurring the words. Donald Trump is a heavy diet soda drinker. I mean, I've seen him multiple times in multiple photos and multiple interviews drinking diet soda. Now, diet soda contains a compound called phenylalanine, which if you get high enough concentrations of phenylalanine in your blood, Austin, you'll slur your speech. I had a good friend of mine who is a pastor, and he was hammering the diet Red Bull. I talked about this a few months ago, and with the aspartame in it, with the phenylalanine. He went and had a blood test done, and his phenylalanine levels were through the roof, and I heard him do a sermon one time online, and he was slurring his speech. So this could be why he's slurring his speech, is the phenylalanine. I've got some people that I know that know him, so what I'll do is the next time they have a chance to talk to him, if they even get to see him again with what's going on with the military junta in the White House, I'll ask them to tell him that the phenylalanine will make you do that. But I've actually seen a video of him slurring his speech before. I have seen that. It was to the point, gosh, I've got the video, I shouldn't even tell you guys this. It was to the point of him sounding like he was almost drunk. And it was after he had won the election back in November, but I keep hearing he doesn't drink and he doesn't take drugs. Well, okay, great, but then why is he slurring his speech? So I've heard the slurring the speech, and I actually had it on my cell phone, but I don't think I saved it. I don't think I wanted to have that in my cell phone. The United Nations, President Donald Trump invited the question, and now the world must answer. If America insists on putting itself first, will anyone else follow? Trump scolded and badgered in his United Nations debut. He declared parts of the planet are going to hell, H-E double sticks, standing Tuesday before the iconic green marbled General Assembly backdrop. He painted a grim picture of the globe as he sees it, teeming with crisis and conflict, delinquents, and deadbeats. Now, what I found interesting about this, he used the term going to hell because he knows what's happening around him. He knows who these people are around him, and he knows that he's probably surrounded by Luciferians. So I thought that was interesting that he actually came out and said that. The problem with all of this is this, and this is why people really aren't taking his rhetoric seriously anymore, except for what's left of his base, who in many cases is very disappointed in him. The problem is simply this. We're still in Afghanistan. He told us we'd get out of Afghanistan. We're still in Syria. He told us we'd be out of Syria. He told us that we needed to get out of all these military engagements and conflicts. We're still in all the military engagements and conflicts. We still have our troops basically guarding the poppy fields in Afghanistan. We still have no wall basically going into between us and Mexico. He's also, by the way, reneging now on getting rid of the Dreamers Act. He wants to go ahead and bring all of these people in and keep them all here. He's made a lot of compromises. So everybody's beginning to realize that even despite his rhetoric, it's pretty much business as usual in the United States for the military, industrial, saboteur, cabalas, international banking cartels that run everything, and they're really not paying much attention to him anymore because regardless of what he says or does, everybody understands that he's pretty impotent as far as getting stuff approved. I mean, we still have Obamacare, thanks to McCain. We still have Obamacare, and that's single-handedly wiping out discretionary income with people all over the United States. It's a giant disaster that can't be fixed. It's like a giant cancer that needs to be cut out. I mean, this is a mess with Obamacare. And guys, Trump so far at this point, he's done a few things here and there, but overall, what he told us that he would do at the beginning of his term, he's simply having a very, very difficult time getting it done, especially with the GOP, the Republicans in the Congress and in the Senate, are so compromised that they simply don't want to work with him as far as doing what they want to do. But I'll say one thing for him, Austin. They've all showed their real colors, and I hope they bleed at midterms, and I hope a lot of these Congress guys that have done this get replaced, and we have people running against them all over the country now. What do you think?
Yeah, me too. They definitely have. You're very accurate about that. I mean, they have definitely shown their true colors in all the aspects of it as far as what they're truly about. And it's kind of funny now as we've seen that so much. But also, too, this is a pretty interesting article that just came out now. It's a recent study by a group of university professors, and it was led by Professor Brian Boutwell, PhD, and Associate Professor of Criminology and Criminal Justice at St. Louis University. And it was quite astounding because they wanted to look into the amount of individuals who actually felt they've been truly discriminated against. And so the vast majority of Americans, irrespective of race, have never experienced real discrimination, they found in this research study, even though the media is trying to portray it, the mainstream news on a regular basis is trying to push this rhetoric, and you have these hate groups like Antifa and Black Lives Matter that are constantly saying this stuff. But the research team surveyed over 14,000 Americans across all racial backgrounds and found that barely 25% had ever experienced some form of discrimination whatsoever. What was even more interesting was the fact that this discrimination was experienced across the spectrum, not just by minorities. They stated 31% of the blacks, 27% of Hispanics, 23% of whites, and 18% of Asians reported being on the receiving end of discrimination sometimes or often. But what was also noteworthy is that almost 60% of the respondents indicated that the discrimination they experienced was most often not racially motivated whatsoever, but involved their either personal appearance or political views. And so that's one aspect of it that you guys have to understand right now that's showing us here that a good deal of people have never really experienced any type of significant discrimination. They're either taking it as discrimination when nothing really is going on, or the mainstream media is constantly trying to put these subliminal thoughts in everybody's mind through their mind control tactics, which they are very good at doing, by the way. So understand what they're doing, and they're planting these little seeds in everybody's brain and trying to get them to sprout through all this weird, weird psychological nonsense that they're constantly peddling through the mainstream media, Dad. But I thought that was pretty wild. Even currently, as aggressive as everything has gotten and how everybody's trying to make everything some type of racial factor in every aspect, they found that right under 25% of all the people surveyed said they had experienced some type of discrimination, and it was almost completely even across the board as far as the demographics racially.
And here we have Breitbart coming out with another story that says there's a survey, 20% of college students support using violence to shut down speakers because of racism. Okay? I mean, it's ridiculous. A survey of college students say they want to shut down speakers because they're racist, motivated by what he calls the narrowing window of permissible topics on campus. The Brookings Institute fellow and UCLA professor John Villasor set out to uncover exactly how college students felt about the right to free expression on campus. A survey of 1,500 current American college students by the Brookings Institute, 44% of the respondents said that they don't believe hate speech is protected by the First Amendment of the Constitution. Accordingly to the survey, women are more likely to believe that hate speech is not protected, while with 49% of female respondents claiming that the First Amendment does not protect hate speech as opposed to 39% of male respondents. 62% of left-wing respondents claim they believe that students should be able to shout over controversial speakers so they cannot be heard. 39% of right-leaning respondents. I mean, this is crazy. And 20% said the use of violence is okay when shutting down a controversial speaker. So, okay, so here's a controversial speaker. Somebody who comes in, who believes in God, who's a conservative white man, who wants to do a speech saying that we need to put family first and God first. I'm not talking about some nutbag weirdo who wants to run the KKK through the administration there at the school. I'm talking about just going up and speaking. They want to be able to have the right to shout them down if they want, and they want to have the right to use violence. 20% of the people want to have violence. Now guys, this is a massive, massive affront to our First Amendment rights here in the United States with any of this, and it just shows you how these guys didn't pay attention in civics class. Now, as far as if you have disrupting people at a seminar that aren't violent, aren't throwing things, etc., and they're shouting the speaker down, they just need to turn the speakers up, you know, turn the speakers up and the microphone up so they can talk over them. But guys, throwing things and beating them up and dragging them off and half killing them or whatever, That's not okay, guys. We have our First Amendment in this country, and as much as I don't like it, people saying things that I disagree with, gosh, we got to be careful, because that's a slippery slope if we try to stop everybody from saying stuff we don't like, Austin. Pretty soon, everybody gets censored, and the state has to determine what's okay to say and what's not okay to say, and that's where we're headed, son. What do you think?
Well, that's exactly, you just nailed it. That's what it runs into, is we run into what's basically known as the free speech police, where they come in and they dictate, well, you guys can talk about this topic, but you can't say this. This group can talk about this topic, but you can't say this. That is diametrically opposed to the First Amendment and everything that the Founding Fathers even built this country on, because that was one of the primary aspects of being able to come to this country and build what they had, was because, remember guys, that's exactly what they dealt with in England. If you got up on a box and you started saying, the king is this, the king is that, we don't need to deal with him anymore, we basically shouldn't have to listen to his oppressive rhetoric, we shouldn't have to pay his unfair taxes, we should be able to own guns, they literally would grab you, drag you to the king, if you got lucky enough to even make it there, and normally you'd either be hung or shot publicly, and that was the extent of it. That was your right to free speech, as long as you could yell until they got a hold of you and executed you. That's what they did. So this whole concept of everything now, where we can come in and say, well, you can talk about this and this group can say this, but if this is offensive, you can't say that, is really, really bothers me, because we're really starting to blur that line. And if we start pushing that line further and further and further to where a lot of these groups now are saying, you need to ban them. The state needs to come in and say, you can't talk about that. The government needs to come in and ban these groups. The government needs to come in and ban any type of talk. A lot of these guys, what they talk about, whether it be the KKK or whether it is the Black Lives Matter group, I don't agree with a lot of what they say, almost all of what they say. A lot of it's just really, really ignorant in most cases. But on the other aspect of it too, if we start coming in and policing them and say, well, you're Black Lives Matter, you can't say this, you have absolutely no right to say this, we're going to arrest you and charge you with a felony for saying this, and the same thing goes with a KKK member. Now, when it starts going to the next line of trying to do great bodily harm and property damage and injuring people because of what you say and because you don't agree with what they say, that's an entirely different topic. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to blur those lines in by saying, if somebody says something I don't agree with, it's so offensive to me, it hurts me, and I should have the right to defend myself with lethal force because what they said to me is so hurtful and so offensive, I am angered inside, and that is the only way I know how to defend myself, is to take a 2x4 or a baseball bat or a bottle of urine and pour it on them. That's the only way I know how to defend myself. That, on the other hand, is not acceptable. It should not be tolerated, and those were the lines they're trying to blur them right now, so in turn they can actually get rid of the First Amendment, Dad.
Our societal norms are being blurred. And
yes.
Let me explain to you what I mean by that. The what we thought was right and what we thought was wrong back when I was a kid back in the 50s is different now. I mean, now it's okay for a guy to go use the bathroom with little girls if he basically sees himself as a transgender that day. That wasn't okay back in the 50s. And my kids kind of think sometimes I'm a dinosaur because I kind of like have those kind of values way back when. It's just, those are the right values. I mean, you don't have to have grown men who pretend to be women using the bathroom with little girls. That, none of that's okay. I mean, we didn't have, when we were kids, you know, Mr. Ed was a big TV show. We were a talking horse. You know, I Dream of Jeannie, the little genie in the bottle. You know, Gomer Pyle, USMC. You know, Father Knows Best. The Incredible Adventures of Superman, those kind of things. Those were the TV shows that we watched, most of them still in black and white, you know, Gilligan's Island. And no bad language, no gratuitous sex, none of this nonsense. All you had was just pretty much slapstick comedy on a few of these shows. Some of them were dramas, they were pretty good. Like Perry Mason had a great show on back then. But you didn't see all of this filth and this perversion. Now it's like every homosexual on the planet wants to be on TV and promote his homosexuality to all the rest of us, telling us that we have to accept it and we're going to like it, which I don't. And now we're being told that it's okay, you know, if we have sex with little children, according to Hillary Clinton, if she wants to legalize pedophilia and bestiality, sex with animals. I mean, the societal norms are being completely and totally degraded. We're no longer following the Bible. We're no longer following the Torah, the Old Testament, or the New Testament in many cases. We have churches now that are name it, claim it, blab it, grab it guys flying around in G5 jets, and they have a fleet of jets. One of them was asked here recently, how many jets do you have? And he says, none of your business how many jets I own. And he walked off and wouldn't talk to him anymore. Claims that man, that particular preacher, claims to be a billionaire. Well, my response is this. You know, there are a lot of hungry people on the planet. There's a lot of people starving. A lot of Africans need wells. A lot of South Americans need wells. I mean, why in the world are the billions of dollars this particular pastor has, why is that money not being used as in a conduit to help the people that need help across the planet and to bring the Christian message to the best of his ability to all the people around the world? Why does he need a fleet of jets for one guy? Why is that necessary? And I know I'm picking on Christians right now because, guys, we're the ones that allowed this to happen. You know, I'll never forget this. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to step on a couple toes here real quick. Years ago, when I was in the mid-70s, I wasn't saved yet. I got saved in 1979. And I remember my dad called me up one time and he said, Ted, I've been watching Oral Roberts on TV. You know, I mean, he's dead now, so I wouldn't say this if he was alive. But both of my father's gone. May he rest in peace. And Oral Roberts is also gone. And I remember he had a bad hip. He got stepped on the farm when he was a young boy, and his hip got crushed. And one leg was about 4 inches shorter than the other leg, and he had to have a buildup on his one shoe. And he said, I'm going out to Oral Roberts because he says he can heal me by praying for me. Now remember, I'm not a Christian at this point in my life. Okay, I'm probably 20 years old, not a Christian, and he wants me to fly to Iowa. Because he's like, by this time, my dad was 54 when I was born, so I was probably 20 years old. He was in his mid-70s at that point. And he wanted me to drive him from Iowa down to Tulsa to have Oral Roberts pray for him. And I said, Dad, you're helping me through college. You're paying my bills. So if you want me to come drive you there, I'll be more than happy to. So the answer is yes, sir. So I flew up there and I did this. And I'll never forget this. Dad showed me a letter that he said Oral Roberts had written to him personally. This is when they first had started doing the mass mailing, and everybody would get their name on the letter, like, Dear Ted. My dad's name was Ted also. Dear Ted, I'm so glad you sent me the letter. Thank you so much for your contribution. We're praying for your healing. And it would be signed by Oral Roberts. Well, it wasn't to Dad. It was being done through a machine that was basically putting his name on it, and he was having a fake signature put on every letter, and they were using these companies out of Tulsa and sending out hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of these letters on an ongoing basis to get people to come to the Mabee Center there at ORU in order to be prayed for, to be healed by Oral Roberts. And my dad really bit this hook, line, and sinker, and he asked me to take him out there, and I did. I drove him out there. And I went to the Mabee Center, I'll never forget this, and they called everybody who needed to be healing, be healed up on the platform, and I went up there with Dad. Now remember, I'm not saved at this point. So I kind of got a jaded attitude towards the whole bit. And all of a sudden my dad, Oral Roberts, walked by and just touched my father. My father tried to say something to him, he completely ignored my dad and went by him. And it really made me upset. It got me mad. And so I began to realize just exactly what was going on. Of course, my father was not healed. And then the following year, he wanted me to take him back out there again, and I did. And then finally, he wanted to go out again, and I told him that I would not. Now, remember, my father was sending a substantial portion of his income and his savings to ORU to be healed because he was told this is seed faith that you've got to give your money away in order to be healed. And so I've kind of got a bad attitude towards all of that. Now, do I believe that God can heal us? Yes. Do I believe that God can supernaturally do things? Yes. Do I believe all of the things the Bible said happened? Yes. That's the thing. So when I got saved several years later, it still left a bad taste in my mouth with what happened with ORU. But guys, Oral Roberts was the one who started the Seed Faith program, in which he started telling people, basically, you send me money and you'll be blessed. Send me money and you'll be healed. You have to put your faith out there via money to do this. And now, the reality is this. A person is going to support what he believes in. A person is going to support what he wants. If a person wants a certain car and they have the money to buy it, they're going to buy that car. They're not going to buy something they don't want. So what ends up happening, you start playing with basic human nature and you start manipulating people into doing what you want them to do as far as supporting your lifestyle or building your big campus at ORU or whatever you're going to do. And I remember years later, I had a friend of mine go out there and became the president of ORU after Oral Roberts was long gone and passed on. And I warned my friend, I said, I'd be really careful when you go out there. I said, you're going to be going in from the frying pan into the straight fire. I said, I really would stay away from that place because it's really got some weird stuff going on out there. And you guys have all read about it. I'm not going to talk about that. And what ended up happening is I was right. The person didn't finish the contract. He goes through for 5 years, didn't go for the full 5 years, and left. And the thing about this is this. Guys, whenever you have people that are trying to force you or manipulate you to do things, and basically making you promises they can't deliver or saying things that they know aren't true, you've got to really watch your pocketbook. I know we had another pastor come into one of the churches here in Lakeland, And he's also on a lot of the TV shows, and he's just very unscrupulous. Oh my gosh, he's unscrupulous. In fact, if you read the book, Thieves, that was written about, oh gosh, by Trey Smith, he talks about this pastor in detail. It's actually a pretty good read, and if you want to get a real understanding of some of these guys and their lifestyles, you can read this book called Thieves, T-H-I-E-V-E-S. I believe that's the way he spells it. And but that's a great book to read, and it talks about how, well, you read the book if you want to read it. But guys, it's just be very, very careful. Support your local churches. Support your local pastors. You know, get into a good group of people that are working together through your church, like a home study group. Work with those guys. Find good quality friends. Stay away from heathen people who are trying to drag you into their ditch. If you have friends that you do things with on a regular basis, make sure they're born again and saved. Make sure that they're going to do what they say they're going to do. Make sure that they're godly. Make sure that they believe in Jesus. Make sure that they're saved. I'm assuming that everybody's listening to me right now are Christians. You don't want to hang out with people that are heathen. I've got a person that I met up in North Carolina. He's a Jewish fellow. In fact, I read one of his, when I was in Texas to you guys a few weeks ago, and he says how much he loves it up there because he loves the energy and the feeling of being up around all these people. Well, that's the Christianity up there in North Carolina where we bought our little property up there a few months back. And what's funny about this is that he is in a situation where he doesn't want to be involved with the people of South Florida where he was from as an accountant CPA down there, and he wants to be involved with the people up there because he doesn't want to hang out with all those backbiting nightmares down there in South Florida. So he starts saying stuff how the people up there are very simple and they have simple beliefs. And I said to him, I said, well, it seems funny to me, these simple beliefs that you're calling simple beliefs about Christianity is what's attracting you to these people. Maybe they've got the truth. Maybe that's holiness. I said, you're being attracted to these people because these people are telling you the truth. These people are giving you really good information. And he said, well, don't tell them that I'm Jewish. That's what he said. He said, every time I talk to him, he says, don't tell anybody I'm a Jew. And I'm like, dude, I said, why do you act like that? Why are you so ashamed of being a Jew? Well, these people don't like Jews up here. I'm like, well, that's not true. I said, I haven't heard one person say anything about Jews except for you. You're the only person. And I said, you're Jewish. And I said, it's ridiculous. I said, don't act like this. I said, why don't you think about accepting Christ? And then he said he sent me some text about, all the stuff, just completely dissing all world religions. And I finally I texted him back and I said, well, as far as Christianity, I completely and totally disagree with you. I'm diametrically opposed to your value system and what you believe. Now, here's why I'm telling you this. I'm still working on him to get saved. Now, he's in his 60s, so it's going to be very difficult. The statistics aren't in his favor for that, but all things are possible through God. But here's the thing. He's not my bosom buddy. I don't go out to hang out with him. I don't go eat dinner with him. I don't go have, you know, I don't hang out with him. I met him one time at a place where I was doing my talk show because I was using their internet, and I said hi to him. That's how I met the guy, and he lives up there now. So I'm not associating with him like he's going to be my best pen pal friend that I'm ever going to have the rest of my life. I don't want to be involved with that. I don't want to be involved with somebody who's unwilling to look at the truth of what Christianity is. I don't need people to hang around with to be happy. We have the righteousness, peace, and joy from the infilling of the Holy Spirit. I don't have to be around other people in order to be entertained. The only person I really want to hang around with anyhow are my wife and my kids and, like, you know, you and Austin, Atlanta. And those are the people I want to hang out with. People have the similar values. So guys, do yourself a favor. We're losing the value system here in the United States. And the reason for that is we're compromising our values because we're no longer doing the things that we were taught to do by our parents and by our grandparents. We've got to go back to those values and those systems if we're going to save this country. Because, guys, Trump is right about one thing. There are many places in the world that's going to hell in a handbasket. And quite frankly, the United States and a lot of these liberal areas are one of those places in the world that's doing that. What do you think, son?
Yeah, I mean, that's good info, man. You're absolutely right. I mean, that's one aspect of what everybody has to realize right now is things get more aggressive and the world starting to get more and more pollutive. You have to try to go back to your roots on everything and what you grew up with, because it's getting worse. I mean, we see that, like we just talked about with the movies and how everything, I mean, if you look back at movies from the 80s and 90s and then compare them to a large amount of movies currently in production over the last 10 years now, I mean, it's almost like you skipped 100 years as far as how much more perverted and filthy they've gotten just over the last 20 to 30 years. And that's not by accident, guys. That didn't happen just by random chance. They've done that on purpose. They've slowly been corrupting this last generation significantly. And now with the internet and the massive amount of porn that's on the internet, bring that up, that's doing a huge number to this really, really young generation now, because how it's polluting their brain and it's completely causing them to disassociate from real reality on a lot of stuff that's going on. There was another article that just came out that they were doing a research study on essentially kids right now, younger generation from like 14 to 18, and what they're doing as far as what they're being involved in, that said the first thing about it they found out is that a lot of these kids now they're older before they start experimenting with alcohol, but they also said now they're acting like they're much younger because they're not going in and not actually doing more teenager and adult things. They're just sitting back, and they said when they surveyed most of these kids, majority of the kids, what they said they did for activities was sit online, either playing video games or essentially watching porn, they didn't say that on there, or sitting on social media literally for hours and hours and hours and hours on end, especially with the video games and the virtual reality now and the 3D virtual reality headsets that all these kids are wearing now with these video games. And that's what's going on, is they're turning these kids into idiots to where they literally don't know what's going on, and they're so wrapped up in these virtual worlds, and it's polluting their minds so aggressively and so quickly, they could care less about what's going on. They could care less about actually learning how to do survival techniques out in the woods, you know, training and working with firearms, learning how to repair a vehicle, learning key assets on things that are going to benefit them when they get older. And a lot of that also too stems down to the moral compass, because when you start playing a lot of these games or looking at stuff online that you shouldn't be looking at for extended periods of time, it really, really decays your moral compass and your ethics internally. And that's what's going on right now. But also too, on a health topic, this is pretty cool. Now, researchers from Australia's Center for Human Psychopharmacology at Swinburne University wanted to find and figure out what link vitamin C had on cognitive functioning. They know the antioxidant properties of vitamin C. We've talked about what it does for as far as, you know, helping to boost the immune system significantly. But they wanted to go in and they looked at the animal studies shown that how vitamin C plays a huge role in impacting the general development of neurons, neural differentiation, and formation of the myelin sheath as well. Then they went in and looked at literally like 500 different studies, and the reviews carried out by Australian researchers is the first one now to examine the effects of vitamin C levels on cognitive performance and people with normal cognitive functioning. And just from their first findings, they found that those who were cognitively intact had significantly high blood concentrations of vitamin C, and they were correlated directly with cognitive ability, meaning the individuals that were cognitive there, they were there, they were smart, they didn't have any issues mentally, and they had good cognitive ability, also had high levels of blood, of vitamin C in the bloodstream. Another study that they actually worked off of on this was published back in September of 2014 in the issue of Nutrients. They found that vitamin C was a vital factor in preventing cognitive decline and aging, as well as neurodegenerative disorders. They said deficiency in vitamin C also impacts brain function through development or regeneration after suffering a traumatic brain injury. So it's just another plus, guys, for vitamin C, and that's why on a daily basis I usually take on average about 1,500 to 3,000 milligrams daily through all my different supplements. You don't need much more than that. It's a very high dose, but a very usable, functional dose for pretty much everybody. And if you start having your immune system get compromised or you need to get a vitamin C IV, then you can obviously bump up the dosages to what you can handle. But that's why our Excellent C product, I think it's actually our like number 5 selling product we have on the entire website in our store, is our Excellent C, because it's a buffered, very absorbable, all natural form of vitamin C, and it works really, really well for not just the immune system but also for cognitive functioning, Deb.
Also, it's one of the best things you can do as far as preventing cancer. Linus Pauling got a Nobel Prize for his work on vitamin C. And he was like 60 years old, 50 years old when he got the Nobel Prize. He got multiple Nobel Prizes. And what was always funny with Linus Pauling is he kept working into his 90s. And the irony is this, all of the doctors that he had released this information to about the vitamin C when they were in their 50s and 40s and 30s and whatever, he outlived them all. They boo-hooed him and said he was crazy. He kept working until he was in his 90s. And he took 10 grams a day. Now, 10 grams a day is tough. because of what it does on the bowels. Now, our vitamin C, you can get a, you probably get away with 10 grams, but it really isn't necessary taking that much. Every morning I get up and I take about 2 grams. I get a 22-ounce glass of distilled water. I put the 2 grams of vitamin C in it, and I dump a Purple Stick in it, and I stir it up, and I drink that first thing in the morning to rehydrate myself, and I get my vitamin C first thing in the morning. First supplement I take with the Purple Stick is the vitamin C, because I realize how important it is to maintain high plasma levels of vitamin C every single day. And I can't tell you how many times I've been at the house about to get up in the morning, take my stuff, and I tell Sharon, we don't have any vitamin C, let me drive to the office and get what we need, because I don't want to run out. It's so important to maintain that every single day, because remember, it's a water-soluble nutrient, and it doesn't stay in your system about 24 to 36 hours after you take it. Then it's gone. You've got to take it every single day. Another really good article here on diabetes and how to reverse it naturally of pre-diabetics. It said if you're one of the 84 million people in the United States who's been pre-diagnosed with diabetes, if so, there are practical steps you can take today to turn this looming crisis around. It says if you're feeling thirsty or hungry, if you're extremely fatigued, blurred vision, hypoglycemia, tingling or pain in your extremities, unexplained weight loss, frequent infections, urinary, vaginal, and groin, slow healing of wounds, extreme bruising, chronically dry, itchy skin. It says basically you can go in and start on a good heavy-duty supplement program and fix this, including the turmeric, which is so important. And it says get exercise, stabilize your blood sugar, stay with low glycemic carbohydrates, get off the coffee. I can't tell you guys how important it is not to smoke, not to chew, not to do dip, not to do any of those nicotine stimulants, because what they do is they massively elevate blood sugar because they're like an adrenal stimulant. You've got to stay away from all of that stuff, and you've got to stay with high glycemic carbohydrates like bread, pasta, rice, and white potatoes. We've talked about this many, many times. And the Journal of the Diabetic Association of India says that if you use the turmeric and you change your diet, that you'll have a 100% chance of not coming down with adult onset diabetes. And guys, it's so true. I've seen it over and over and over. Look at Doug Hagman. He had the same experience with all that. What do you think? And also the cinnamon extract is critical because it helps open the cell walls up to bring the sugar back into the system, and it helps to activate the insulin that's already in your body so you don't need increasingly larger amounts of insulin. So diabetes is a major problem. It's affecting about 25% of the population is in a pre-diabetic mode. Plus there's tens of millions of other people that are on insulin, and people have already been diagnosed as adult onset diabetics who are also taking things like metformin and insulin. We have a very, very sickly population in the United States simply because they've trusted mainstream medicine, Austin, and they've allowed them to pretty much poison them with all the pharmacia they've been given. What do you think?
No, you're absolutely right. That is the issue. That's why we put together the Hagman blood sugar protocol. And it's a very, very aggressive protocol for people that are having issues. Either A, they already have type 2 diabetes, or they're pre-diabetic. And, you know, I get some customers that call in and say, hey, you know, I'm really on a tight budget, I can't afford that whole protocol. And that's two of the main products I always start people on, is the turmeric and the cinnamon extract as the key base products. And then usually the cod liver oil is a really important one to add in there. But if you're really on a tight budget, the turmeric and the cinnamon, and coupling that with a really healthy diet with adequate water intake, usually can get blood sugar under control very, very quickly. But there also has to be a key dietary habit change, because you can't sit there and keep eating the way you've been doing and drinking the way you've been doing and take a couple different supplements and expect your entire body composition and your organs just to function properly. So it's very, very important that you make sure you couple that. That's why when we have the Hagman Healthy Blood Sugar Protocol, we actually send you 2 pages of the blood sugar protocol support in there, guidelines, and gives you an idea exactly what to be eating, what not to be eating, how to be taking the supplements, what to do as far as with dietary and lifestyle changes in the body, and it really helps out a lot. We've had literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people call in and email about the positive effects they have gotten from that blood sugar protocol, including Doug Hagman himself. So it's been a very, very effective protocol, and it's very easy a lot of times to get blood sugar under control from type 2 diabetes. You just have to be willing to make the changes. Also, too, I thought this was pretty wild they did this now, but it's kind of cool. A new statue of Mikhail Kalichnikov holding his signature AK-47 was unveiled on Moscow on Tuesday. They said the statue commemorates one of Russia's most renowned inventions. It goes into detail. It has a plaque at the bottom about Kalichnikov, and he was born in 1919 and was born to a peasant family and started working essentially on a machine gun rifle for the Russian military that was released obviously in 1947. That's where the name comes from, is the Kalichnikov 47 from 1947, and they said the AK soon became widely popular for its adaptability to rugged conditions, including jungles, deserts, and bitter cold. Simple to operate, easy to maintain, with little training, uses this rifle can often field strip it in half a minute, and they are absolutely correct about that. It is the most circulated assault rifle in history of firearms. Definitely is in every single country known to man that actually has guns, which pretty much every country has guns. Very easy to operate and clean. Almost impossible to jam these guns. Dad has one. I've got one. One of my buddies is an AK fanatic. He's got multiple ones. And pretty cool guns, and actually shoots a more effective caliber than the 5.56 that the AR-15 shoots. It's a heavier round. It's actually a 30 caliber round. It's essentially a short 308 with less powder. But to get a really good one, you really have to buy a high-quality AK to get good accuracy out of them. A lot of the cheap ones, they're pretty much lead slingers, what I call them. You're not going to hit anything close range, especially if you have a full-auto one that's registered. But I thought that was pretty wild, Dad. They put a statue up of Kalichnikov in Moscow now, because it was, I have to say, one of Russia's most renowned inventions for that firearm has entered every single country now.
Absolutely. One more quick health thing, and I'll let you take over the show. Antidepressants have now been shown to raise the risk of death. This is crazy. This is I have to go into a little more detail on tomorrow. Researchers at McMaster University in Canada analyzed the results from 17 previous studies, including nearly 380,000 people, and found a 9% increased risk of death among those who took antidepressants. Wow. So I'll cover that story tomorrow in detail on what these do as far as it increases your risk of death. It's probably going to be primarily through suicide. Give you little cliff notes on it. Guys, thanks for supporting us. Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for getting your multiple vitamins and your products from us. We appreciate you. I love you. Austin, I'm going to let you do the write-up. So it'll be on you today, and I'll go ahead and go, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. God bless. Bye-bye.
Sounds good, bud. Yes, guys, we absolutely appreciate everything. Thank you for the support and everything you guys continue to give us, and the emails and phone calls. We're always here to help you guys out the best we physically can, and that's what we do here at healthmasters.com. So if you guys have questions about that, or you need advice on the healthy blood sugar protocol or the basic healthy lifestyle kit, we have those on the website, or you can give us a call up at 1-800-726-1834. We appreciate everything, guys. You have a blessed, safe night, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow, as always.